Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news, the biggest stories, the winners, the losers, the overreported, the underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20, 500 years from tonight? I say it'll be the phantom construction projects on the Indiana Toll Road, but that's personal. That's personal. I got a whole thing. I want my money back.
You got 90 minutes. Go.
Exactly. Jeff Goins in studio, the investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune. Good to see you, Jeff.
Hey there.
And Kim Bellware, reporter at large. You've done so many jobs in this town, and I feel like reporter at large does not do it justice. Editor at large? I mean, because last job you had was with Huffington Post, and that's done. So I guess we'll stay with reporter at large.
I'm turning over a lot of rocks.
There you go. Rock turner. Kim, Jeff, welcome to the show. All right, let's get right to it. I mean, we start tonight with the biggest story. You know, Jeff, I'll start with you. I mean, this is one that I think we all agreed, we kind of unanimous. I mean, there may be national, local, international, but North Korea kind of takes the cake.
Yeah, it's difficult to pick anything else in a week like this when something like that just completely drowns out pretty much several news cycles in a row for lots of obvious reasons. I mean, everybody's terrified of North Korea on a regular basis, and then Trump kind of throws gas on the fire, kind of takes the anti-Obama approach where he was sort of a cooling agent constantly related to that. And I think the strategy that you would give somebody like Kim Jong-un power by grabbing onto all the threats and then returning them is kind of not a scenario that we've seen before.
Volleyball kind of vibe.
That kicked
off
a lot of fear this week.
It's a very strange way to approach it. And, you know, I had Charles Lipson on last night, the professor from University of Chicago, political science professor, who got past all the sort of Trump's crazy and Trump improvising with the rhetoric. And he pointed out that this is not improvising. This is a strategy. And this is by far a new direction for the United States, and he says the right one, because it's time to get tough on a rogue state like North Korea. And what do you guys think of that? I mean, it doesn't feel like that plays out when you read it in the New York Times or any of the newspapers, but that seems to be, you know, where we're at. Is Trump out of his league, or is he fixing a problem that other presidents have set up for him?
I think the problem is the flavor. I mean, there are quotes like this in the news this week where Trump tells reporters that Kim Jong-un will regret it if he, quote, utters one threat in the form of an overt threat, or if he does anything with respect to Guam. This guy wakes up and issues threats to his neighbors. And this is not you don't want two crazy people in this kind of a scenario. Not saying the president's necessarily crazy, but you want some kind of stability.
Right.
And neither one of these guys really projects stability on a regular basis.
Kim, what's your take on this? I mean, as you see, you know, the ratcheting up of the rhetoric, what I find fascinating is that seems to be a callback to a different time where we were talking about nuclear war.
I wake up to the radio. That's my alarm. And twice this week, I've woken up to news reports about a tweet that came out in the morning related to North Korea. And it always, you know, you like that gets you out of bed when you hear those kind of things. I think, you know, what Jeff said about pouring gasoline on this situation is it really is pretty alarming how quickly it accelerated in a week. I think the threat of North Korea has been something that the American people, they get it, they're aware of it, but it's still very much in the abstract. Nobody's really thinking back to, you know, the Cold War era or anything like that with those kinds of, you know, get plans in place. And now people have come around to those thoughts a lot quicker. In a week, I think we need a little more time to acclimate to
You know, it is interesting because Trump, even today, when he was in his latest press availability, talked about this is really a problem that should have been dealt with a long time ago. I mean, he once again talks about, talks about his predecessor and President Obama, and that was the wrong strategy, like you said, to throw a cooling agent on this. But even if you, I mean, go even further, I mean, you look at President Bush, and there were a lot of headbutting with the family at that point. So it feels like this isn't new, but this is a new strategy.
I think part of what happened is we've had several presidents in a row who have said a nuclear-equipped North Korea is not tolerable. We will take steps to prevent that from happening. And I think we had that analysis at the beginning of the week, which said that the state has managed to already miniaturize nuclear weapons and can now deliver them on missiles. It kind of that ratcheted up really fast.
Yeah.
And I think that caught a lot of people by
now,
surprise.
Now, the question I have, and it really is a provocation question. We saw this story come out, but it feels like we're forgetting that the week before the UN put pretty tough sanctions on North Korea, and North Korea responded, and they responded with test missiles and started to go out. So there seems to be almost a little bit of revisionist history about what started this latest tit for tat, but it really was sanctions that the Kim family said, no way, you know, they got mad. Then it became, hey, they have nuclear weapons now. Then it became political rhetoric on both sides about we're going to shoot it, or if you threaten us, big. And I forgot what the quote was. That fire and fury.
Yeah.
I mean, but you see that there's definitely a linear storyline just this week.
Well, the other thing that I thought was a little confusing is you do have this continual upping from Trump of, you know, we're going to be tough on them. We're not going to give them any quarter. We're not going to back down. We're going to be the ones that deal with this. And people are getting scared. And then at the same time, you know, you have his aide saying, I think everybody can sleep well at night. That's some mixed messaging that I don't know that makes me feel any better.
You hear more and more stories about how the U.S. and the Secretary of State and the others have been working behind the scenes for diplomatic solutions. And it seems to be a good cop, bad cop scenario here where Trump is in the media talking tough, but what they're really doing is behind the scenes trying to get China involved.
Always occurred, you know, throughout our recent history where there have been steps taken behind the scenes. What's new and as a part of that, North Korea and the leadership there has used the fiery language to kind of show that they're tough and not lose any face in the home country, et cetera. What's new this time is that Trump is kind of doing the same thing. And I don't know if it's because he feels like he's in a weakened state and can also take advantage of a situation where people are moving toward war footing and it's distracting from a lot of other things that he has going on, like the Russia probe and stuff.
Yeah. I've heard that. Yeah.
And it's tricky because they're both variables. You don't have, one slightly more steady or cautious or predictable leader. Now you have two wild cards and two leaders that both seem to respond in similar ways to provocations and slights, real or perceived. And that doesn't seem like it's going to end very well for those of us that don't have the codes.
And I will say this, you know, I have North Korea because I have gone down the rabbit hole. Like, I'm really interested in this story. And, you know, The problem I see it as, and like I said, Professor Lipson was on last night, we were talking about it as well, is that this is really, in a way, a proxy war between China and the United States. China is the ally of North Korea. The U.S. is the ally of South Korea. What never really gets talked about is that North Korea is a very unstable government. That government could be toppled pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And that country, if fallen to the wrong hands, in China's view, the U.S., means that the U.S. have an ally that would be on the border of China. And so there's a little bit, they're trying to protect that space because they understand the political and military incentive to keeping an ally close like that. Yet they also are very aware that North Korea is provoking trouble for China. It's a very interesting, I think there's a lot more to be said. I think Trump, in a weird way, the sort of rhetoric is making everyone look over here, look at the shiny object, but there's much more going on. And I really truly believe that it's a dangerous game he's playing, but at the same time, it's a game that hasn't been played before. And the big issue is, what does China do? If China goes in and says, Kim family, gone, this is too hot for us, you got to go, then it all worked out, right? I mean, that's
when they do always play the long game. You're right about that.
Yeah, I don't China's know. I'm fascinated. I don't see Trump as ignorant in this situation. I think that this is calculated. I think this is a strategy. He's approaching it with his known unpredictability and using that as a strength. And so by him going, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll bomb you. They're like, I think that could work to the advantage for the North Korea is a big story. I want to know what you think. 312-981-7200. But locally, if we're not going to do international, locally, Kim, you've got school funding.
I think we both had school funding. That, you know, the school year is going to start in a matter of weeks. It's been another one of those
matter
football
of days in some parts of Illinois.
That's true. Yes, in a matter of days in some parts of Illinois. CPS is, you know, going to start later this month, and the whole school funding formula in Springfield has been kicked around. And then today there was this bombshell that CPS is now lacking for $269 million for its 2018 budget. And there's some questions on where that money's going to come from. And then we hear something that we hear often from City Hall, you know, from Rahm's office, is that, you know, we're going to support the school. We're going to figure this out. But there's never any indication of where that money's going to come from. There's always money in the banana stand.
Here's what we'll do. Let's take a break so we stay on time, and we'll catch up on school funding, because that'll come up in winners and losers and all the other categories, because a huge week when it comes to the strategy deployed by both sides of the aisle in Springfield, bringing back the we're going to see this weekend with a possible override of the veto. So a lot going on. Kim Bellware, Jeff Cohen in studio, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio, 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Rich, what do you say for the biggest story of the week with North Korea?
Oh, well, just now when I was mentioned it, basically South Korea's our ally, North Korea is China's ally. Mm-hmm. I would say North Korea, they're more of a tolerated client state from China, because I don't see China going to war with the U.S. over North Korea for one reason. A, we're their biggest trading partner, and the following fact, this is true. If Walmart was its own country, they alone would be China's fourth largest trading partner.
Yeah.
Basically, you don't kill the goose that laid the golden egg, and right now we're the goose.
Right.
So I don't think China would really be nervous about a United Korea right next door, because they know that our economies, basically our lives, are so intertwined that there's no way either one of us could start a shooting war with each other in the U.S., because there is no winner in that situation.
Yep. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for that. Let's go to Kelly. Kelly, what's your thought on North Korea, Kelly?
My thought is I think Trump is doing the right thing. I don't think any other president has held them accountable, and they need to be held accountable. They've just gone way too far. And he's never gone this far with any other president to where he's actually launched missiles and threatened like he's been threatening. So I support Trump.
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent. The question I would push back on is, do you think that it's healthy, the rhetoric, to get into the realm of nuclear war? And we start talking about that because, yes, I agree that this is unprecedented territory. But do you support Trump in the way that you know, it's flippantly being thrown around, this idea of, you know, fire and fury?
I think Trump's doing what he has to do. I mean, Trump is not really the one making the threats. He's responding, and that's, you know, for every action, there's a reaction.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. All right. There we go. So with North Korea, some thoughts on that. I mean, there's something to be said about it. I mean, Trump ran on the concept of talking tough. He ran on the idea of a different international policy, and this is different.
The problem is you give yourself nowhere to go, I think, and that's the fear with both of these leaders, is that they talk themselves into a position where backing down is a loss, and neither one of them does
it.
So every time you escalate it, the territory to work with gets much smaller.
My point with Rich, too, is I'm not that concerned that China would – I don't think China would go to war with the United States. My concern – and again, this is the rabbit hole stuff. You guys will love this – is – North Korea knows that China doesn't have their back, and they consider China to be an adversary in the way that they become a rogue nation and they're up against the wall. Meaning, I didn't recognize this, but the story of the poisoned brother, half-brother or brother that was Kim Jong, I forgot his name, but that was poisoned by the North Koreans, mm-hmm. was in Chinese protection. And they found him in the airport. Because the Chinese are thinking, you know what, maybe Kim Jong-un, let's take him out and put his brother in. So that's what, there's already some intrigue and international stuff going with China and North Korea. So that's my only fear, is if they feel like they're pushed up against a wall, this specific dictator, this leader, what does he do when he's got no other options? That's the part I don't like about the rhetoric, is like, don't get up there. So like you said, Jeff, where there's nowhere to go. And this guy's like, well, I'm going to be taken out anyway, so let's shoot this nuclear missile to Guam and see what happens.
Where's Dennis Rodman in all this?
we need a Rodman,
that
right?
That is a good question. Yeah. He's blown this completely.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's quickly get into winners and losers. Why don't we start with you, Jeff? Who do you got for your first winner this week?
You know, the Trubisky thing is already out of control. And I was watching the game last night with my lovely wife and mother-in-law, and you could see it coming. I mean, all he did was not fumble, not throw three interceptions. And I'm a baseball person. Don't apologize for it. Grew up playing it. That's when I go see sports. That's where I go. That's what I follow closely. And you forget that what a football town Chicago is, that this one guy who was at North Carolina 10 minutes ago throws six passes in a row, and the place comes unglued, up to and including Mike Ditka today. And I have a quote
That's
from him.
Right.
What did Mike Ditka say?
I can tell you right here. He says, "What I saw out of Trubisky for a rookie in his first game I thought was outstanding. I don't know too many rookies, including Tom Brady, Fran Tarkenton, or anybody else that's ever had that kind of a start."
I just
what
snorted.
Are you talking about?
What are you talking about? First of all, it's a preseason game.
Trubisky mania. And the guy's got the perfect, like, Grabowski name. You could just, it's a perfect storm. It's going to get
It close. Is a Bears town. I mean, in the way that it is sports and it is football. But, I mean, it is fascinating to me that a rookie quarterback has one good preseason game. And he was a lead story last night. I came home last night at 12:30. They do the rerun of SportsCenter. A lot of sports is happening. A lot of stuff around the league. And they're like, the first thing that comes up is the Bears see and the other stuff. And he goes, and it was a poetic beginning for the anchor who's like, Chicago has had quarterback trouble. Jay Cutler era has ended, but it's not about Jay Cutler anymore. It's about Trubisky. And they go right into it. And it was like the biggest story in sports.
Huge.
And he's a rookie, and he's not even supposed to play this year.
And what happens the first time he has a bad game? We all know that too. Everybody's like, hey, we got two airports, man. Pick one. You gotta go.
Turn
on him.
Kim, what do you got? What do you have for winners this week?
So I had Taylor Swift, and I talked about how I was a little, you know, I didn't want to bring this one up. I'm not a, you know, I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, but this story, you know, the quick recap was she had been, she'd accused a Colorado DJ of grabbing her butt during a photo shoot, and they complained to his management instead of going to the police. And this is something that I think you would probably hear from a lot of, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault victims, that they don't want to be defined by these events. And that's what her mother said was the reason that they didn't go to the police. They went to his employer. He was fired. He's suing her for $3 million. And she countersued him saying, prove it, you know, or, you know, right. prove, you know. So they were in court today. And actually, a couple hours ago, it got thrown out. So she's a winner there. But she's a winner in another way, because these are situations that whenever a woman in particular, I think, is the victim of sexual assault, there's a whole kind of performative victimhood that I think the public expects. You know, you have to be so damaged. You have to be really upset. And it is upsetting. But she did something really interesting with her testimony. She showed how you could be upset, you could be violated, and you could be extremely strong. And you could not be apologetic, you know,
I thought her testimony was outstanding.
It was great. And, you know, she really was not going to play ball with that attorney of the DJs. You know, he was asking her, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, he lost his job and his career is ruined? She said, I don't feel anything about him. He's in this situation because of his actions, not mine. And I'm glad that she won, because I think there's also, you know, sometimes this unfair burden on, you know, women victims in particular, is they have to be likable. And, you know, she's rich and she's powerful and she's pretty. And, you know, she's just, I almost let one of those bad words out, but, you know, she did not care. She was not going to soften this for him. And I think that was a really powerful thing to see.
I think, and I would put the Colorado DJ, and he's unnamed, in the loser category. And not just because he had his lawsuit thrown out, but because this seemed, even on the lawsuit side, feels stunty in the way that it's good to get Taylor Swift's name. Maybe I can attach my name to it. It's all from terrible, terrible behavior that got him there in the first place. And why he did that, I don't know if he did it for his audience or he did it because it was funny or whatever he was in his mind, allegedly. I mean, there's so much that goes into this, but I put him in the loser category. And it's actually somewhat, I guess, assuring that most of America does. Like, you know, you haven't seen like a huge argument on Twitter about this. It really has been, yeah, that's gross.
Someone should have counseled him to pick his targets a little better too, because, you know, you really. could have
Taylor Swift.
Yeah. That's not, that is maybe the least, you know, the least optimal person to take to court. You know, you have all sorts of feelings of, you know, public public perception and just, you know, she's going to cut a pretty sympathetic figure.
Well,
I think we're
going to watch. She's going to have a talk show and he's going to have a talk show in 2 months somewhere. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio. We're reloading this week's news. We're doing winners and losers. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll get tonight's news with Rob Martyr and then we'll continue here on The Download. Stay with us. Yeah, good track. Beats by Zim tonight. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Kim Bellware, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We are reloading this week's news. Kim is a freelance reporter at large, as we said.
Yeah, Rock Turner.
Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. All right, let's do, we're continuing with winners and losers. Let's wrap up on winners, and then we'll get to the losers, because we've got a lot to talk about in that category. But we had Rahm Emanuel in the winners category when it comes to sanctuary cities. That story was this week. Right at the beginning of this week, he sues the Justice Department saying, yeah, you can't withhold money.
Yeah, it feels like 2 weeks ago, but it was, in fact, Monday. So this issue is just in a real sweet spot for the mayor. You know, it's anti-Trump administration. It's pro-immigrant. It feels like, you know, Chicago underdog thing. He gets to kind of say what he wants and cover a lot of ground with it. But they sued on Monday after the threat to pull some grant funding from the federal government over sanctuary city policies. And Chicago's big issues are the sheriff's office. First of all, the police department doesn't fully cooperate. The sheriff's office doesn't allow ICE agents into the jail like they used to be able to do. And so it's a relatively small amount of money that was being threatened. That it's about $3 million that the city uses. It's supposed to be just, you know, general anti-crime funding. So it's not that much.
It's really about ideology at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but he kind of camped out on it and they sued and Chicago's kind of becoming the poster child. In this
I thought that story, and when I saw that, I was like, okay, I thought a lot about immigration, right? There was a lot about deportations and other. But the big story, and it was Superintendent Eddie Johnson who said, listen, we can't hold people more than 48 hours. And what the Justice Department wants to do in this new Trump policy is hold people for more than 48 hours so that ICE agents can get here and be able to check and see credentials and deport people when necessary. And the city of Chicago, it wasn't an ideology at all. It was just saying, listen, the Constitution says 48 hours. If we do any more than that, we're going to be on the hook for civil lawsuits. My officers are going to get sued. The city's going to get sued. We're not putting our officers in harm's way like that.
Well, the other issue is that the main point that the Justice Department always makes is that they demand that information be turned over. Get the person's immigration status. Don't let somebody go who's, you've got questions along that line. And the city repeatedly says, we don't ask. So we can't turn over what we don't collect.
Right.
And that's always worked.
What do you think of this story, Kim? Do you think that this is a win for Mayor Emanuel?
I mean, I think it's a win because the other thing that they mentioned, I thought, was that the city was not going to incur any legal costs that would wipe out the savings from the grant. So, you know, this is a pretty calculated, you know, risk, if you want to call it that, that they're taking. And I think it's going to be, you know, some good image burnishing for, you know, for Rahm and for the city. And they, like you said, Rahm gets to continue being kind of that needle in Trump's side, you know, Chicago is the face of, you know, the city of resistance kind of thing. I don't think it's going to come back to hurt the city in any meaningful way.
Like you said, it's not that much money. It's really just about the statement.
Yeah. When Jeff Sessions yells at Chicago on CNN, Rahm wins.
Right.
That's just what it is.
Public art winner, Picasso, 50th anniversary. How about
I
that?
Loved this. I want to hear what Jeff has to say, but I just wanted to quickly say I loved that BEZ was replaying Studs Terkel's interviews with what people thought of it.
Isn't that
and
great?
Everybody thought it was so ugly.
we had the one of the designers from Skidmore, Owings & Merrill on, and he brought the letters. Like actual letters that anyone wrote a letter that they did not like the Picasso in 1967, Mayor Daley at the time, he had it forwarded to the design company. Like he's like, this is not a city issue, the design company. So they have in the archive all these letters of dear Mayor Daley, this is crap, or dear Mayor Daley, good job on you. So it's just really interesting to see that that's collected.
I put it on there just because I feel like the artwork kind of as a being has kind of settled into its surroundings, and now it's been overshadowed by, you know, Cloudgate and Millennium Park and so many other things that it's kind of, I think it became a beloved symbol probably long ago, but I was reminded of it this week.
No,
I was
also
reminded of the Royko column the day that was hilarious. It has, you know, the cold, pitiless eyes of a slum lord and all that. That was worth the recycle as well.
Well, it was funny because they also asked back in the day what people thought, you know, the figure was. And right. I think at this point, the city has decided that it is the face of some, you know, sentient creature because they put a Blackhawks helmet on it, yeah, and they dress it for, you know, whenever one of our teams goes to the playoffs.
There's a lot of interesting things about that. I mean, in the convo, they talked about the rust coloring, mm-hmm, and how that was on purpose, and no one really explained that to Chicago, so everyone thought it was just a bad paint job, but it was a new kind of material that on purpose rust. There's a lot that goes into that.
Well, they talked it up so much, too, is what just made it funny. You think about Chicago in the 60s and the inferiority complex that was probably here.
Yeah.
And they unveiled it as this giant piece of global, you know, importance that was going to really elevate Chicago. And they pulled the curtain off of this thing. People kind of stare at it and walk away.
Well, we love it. So, yeah. All right, let's talk losers. Always good to talk losers. And I think we start with the state of Illinois. We had promised to talk about this issue, of course. School funding. Governor Rauner this week ends up on your list, Jeff, as in the loser category. He had a tough week, not only for trying to explain why he vetoed school funding, but then on top of it, explaining what was in his amendatory veto, which and all the things he put forward for his plan. And then even today, getting essentially bad reviews from his own people. I mean, Ann Coulter and some have said that he had his national interview on Fox, and she went to Twitter and eviscerated him.
That's why I put him on there. I think that his the base of his political support is starting to wear down on this issue, and he's kind of endured several losses in a row now, and here comes another one. And even in my paper today, you know, a couple of an editorial writer who's always in his corner even took him to task, saying he botched this, and that's just new. And I think he's finally starting to be dented by it.
I'm always interested in, you know, kind of what Rauner signals for the larger conversation. And I always wondered why more people didn't look at what was happening in Illinois. I mean, the path that he's on really seems similar in some ways to the path that Trump is on. You know, they had these similar, mm-hmm, histories and, you know, not a lot of legislative successes. And they're getting, you know, throttled by some people who are, you know, would otherwise on a different day maybe be their supporters. So, yeah, it's...
Well, I wonder, and I will say that, you know, if you're going to put Rauner in the loser category, you probably could put Madigan in the loser category too, because, you know, this is once again state government at its worst, mm-hmm, where deadlines have been passed. School funding was supposed to be given to schools yesterday yesterday. Some schools are opening Monday. We still don't know how much money they're going to get. I mean, we have played these games with the budget for so long that somehow this has become the norm. And here we are again, where they're going in on Sunday. They're going to override the amendatory veto in the Senate, which essentially kills it. So now we got to go to a new bill, which will take its time, and no one will do anything. And it becomes like a playbook. Then the legislative leaders will go behind closed doors, and one didn't show up, and that was a slight to somebody else. And here we go again down this rabbit hole of years of trying to figure it out, while everybody's on the hook thinking tomorrow they might have to close.
And
it's ridiculous.
I talked about this with you the last time I was on this exact show, how we've devolved into this trench warfare, and everything is like this now. The whole idea of statesmanship and compromise, that went out the window a long time ago. Now we live with kind of, it's the nuclear option every day.
And it's not just, and trust me, I'm on this show and I'm in the carryout and all this time talk about Rauner. But the Democrats have to own this as well, in the way that this chunk of money that has really been at the core, about $260 million, like you mentioned, mm-hmm, Kim, right in that area has been a pension pickup that CPS has wanted. And the Democrats in Springfield have tried several different ways to package that money. And each time Governor Rauner stands in the way. He has made it clear he does not want to give this. And just even with the school funding formula, what's at the core of the argument is once again the Democrats going, oh, before you put that in, slide this in there. and they've been doing that kind of legislative maneuvers and tricks for years. And they do that all the time. And I can understand why voters are like, enough. Like, this is school funding formula. You're sneaking some pension pickups. It's not a part of that. You want to act like it is, but it's not. And that's where I think Governor Rauner has at least been consistent. I think that at some point he has to compromise, like you said. But he has been, remember, it was supposed to be, if you reform pensions, I'll give you this money. That was what, 8 months ago, at the beginning of January, that was the same money. And Democrats have found ways to try and sneak that money in different ways and try to make it political, as opposed to come to the table with Governor Rauner, who also gets bad raps for not compromising. I mean, it's like you said, trench warfare. I'm done. Rant over.
It's making some interesting reactions on the side of the Democratic candidates for governor shaping up.
I know, right?
J.B. Pritzker winning the Democratic Party's nomination today, and some lieutenant governor running mates being announced. And it's August, a year before August. The election.
And let's do this. Let's take a break, and I want to talk about that, because I think that and we've talked about it on this program before, but I think the Democrats run the risk once again to repeat what happened in 2016 election, where everyone anointed Hillary Clinton to be the nominee before she was the nominee. And a progressive movement came up and swelled up, and the Democratic Party did everything they possibly can to put it down, even to the point of losing the election. And I feel in Illinois, we didn't learn the mistake of that has not been learned. In the way that here it is, Mike Madigan here is once again going, it's going to be Pritzker. And there are four or five other candidates. So let it play out. But instead, they're going right to the anointed role, doing it once again. Kim Bellware, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're reloading the news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. 630, Art says, really, most people don't even care about that statue anymore. Oh, ouch, Art. I don't think that's true. I think whenever I go on Washington Street and I see that statue, I'm like, Chicago, Blues Brothers, got it. Boom, next.
Blues Brothers, forgot about that.
630 says, sounds like political grandstanding just so the mayor can say, I'm helping the Mexican-American community in terms of sanctuary cities, essentially placating votes.
That's not unfair.
Yeah,
no,
right.
Nobody's arguing.
No. And 773 says, talk about R. Kelly. We're not going to talk about R. Kelly, but R. Kelly in the news looked like there was going to be a criminal investigation into R. Kelly, but then the Atlanta police said it's closed. So
yeah, Fulton we'll County DA said that there was no investigation going on.
So we'll do 6 hours on R. Kelly next week. all right, 779's got us lined up for our last loser this week, the second biggest loser, the taxpayers of Cook County. Larry says this, and this plays to your loser, Jeff, Tony Preckwinkle. Tough week for County Board President.
People are driving to Indiana to buy Mountain Dew.
Jeff's got a Diet Coke over there.
It's a bad deal. Yeah, it's just, I think, politically for her, too. It wasn't too long ago where she was seen as having the same kind of political muscle as the mayor, practically, and there was kind of a two-tiered system here with the two of them. And when he would run for re-election, people would cast a slight eye toward Tony. Even will she get in? And she was seen as the one person who could maybe, sincerely knock him off. And now she's kind of degraded to the point where she has a possible challenger, even. And she's this has become the issue for her, and it's about. We've got, state income taxes going up. You've got city property taxes going up. This is the T.
This is
one that's practical. People go to the grocery store. They look at their receipt. They're tweeting their receipts. This is one that they can actually kind of see it happening in real time in their map.
And the stores have been in on this before when the ordinance was still being tight, when it was still tied up in court. I went to my neighborhood Mariano's, and there were little tags saying, this beverage, it would be eligible for the soda tax. And then there was a little placard that said, vote no. There was something that, had
when
been handed out.
When your
out.
Grocery store gets political, right? But, I mean, there is something to be said about that. And there's a lot about preparation, because a lot of the stores don't know how to tax. Walgreens is being, there's class action lawsuits about, LaCroix. And we talked about that last week. But, I mean, there's a lot of confusion that can't help. The polls come out. It's almost unanimous in this way that nobody wants. I mean, you can't call somebody on a poll and be like, are you in favor of a soda tax? I mean, you're going to get 100% on that. But I mean, you're right. When it comes to, like, the moment that this tips over, the soda tax is the closest we've seen since Todd Stroger did the sales tax, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That was the one that said that ended his political career. I mean, there are other things in there as well, but Cook County Board President, Tony Preckwinkle, I want to see how she responds to this, because she's been out in front of this. She continues to argue. She even went to Twitter and yelled at Walgreens. She's in front. She's saying, I'm going to go after this, and it'd be interesting to see how she develops what her position is as this soda tax continues to make people angry.
Well, I mean, she doubled down on it yesterday. It's in today's paper where she was asked point blank if she'd repeal it, and she turned to kind of the put a human face on it and say, you remember we were debating this, it was basically this or cutting 1,000 people out of the payroll.
Yeah.
But they already cut them. They already got their layoff notices.
Well, they're supposed to come back. They're supposed to get those people back at some point.
Right.
But I Charlie Meyerson was on the show last week, and he brought up the potential. This isn't appeals. And it gets to a certain point where, I mean, some argue that Cook County Board President used those layoffs to be able to influence the judge to say, oh, this is important, let's have this because people are losing their jobs. Is public fervor enough to influence a judge later down the line to say, you know what, no soda tax? And if so, then everyone's going to owe their money back.
Judges drink
so
sodas too.
What happens at that point when it gets rescinded and then everyone is
just
going to...
Just bring your receipts.
Just bring your... Hold on to your receipts. Hold on to your receipts. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio. We'll come back. Here's what we're going to do. We'll do the overreported and underreported. What stories took us down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week. It's a download, reload in this week's news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Kim Bellware in studio. Jeff Cohen as well. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. We are reloading this week's news. We are on to overreported and underreported. Yay. Jeff, you've got a controversial overreported, but I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, this won't be popular. It's going to make me sound like a grumpy older person. But,
yelling at a cloud or the moon in this case.
The eclipse for me. I feel like it's happened 4 times. It's still 10 days away. You can't turn on anything without seeing the eclipse.
Yeah. I'm with you. I thought it already happened.
Right. And people are trying to get married during it. Okay. At the peak, it's like 3 minutes long, first of all. I know it's going to be kind of dark for an hour and a half or whatever, but it's really fast. And you have to remember that back in time, it was a sign that, you know, God was angry. This would happen and the Mayans would sacrifice 100 extra people. You know,
right.
This is not the kind of thing you should be trying to like get married during. The whole thing is just kind of, it's starting to kind of wear me down.
My pushback on that was, I remember an eclipse when I was in elementary school, and it's true that these do happen all the time and they happen all over the world, but it's like 0.2% of the world's population, you know, is in the line of totality. So they happen often, but a very, very small population of the world, if they even bothered, could see them. And like you said, they happen so fast, they're just gone. So we're in this unique moment in the United States
where we are,
and we're within 200 miles of the line of totality. So the thing that I think is a good servicey journalism,
that's what I'm talking about. That's what Jeff and I, that's what I'm like, all right, I've heard that so many times.
What I think is fascinating though is, you know, apparently some of these small towns, so in Illinois, the line is going through Cairo, Murfreesboro, Carbondale, St. Louis, Nashville, and Kansas City are some of the biggest Midwestern. I mean, after that,
will I be able to see it in Chicago or no?
You will be able to see it. You won't get the same effect with like the temperature cooling the shadow.
Always cooler somewhere else.
But some of these small towns have apparently been planning for 3 years to handle the huge influx. And if you look on, I looked on Airbnb 2 weeks ago, and there is someone in, I think, Shawnee National Park downstate who has an RV that sleeps 5, and they're selling each bed in the RV for $100 a night. I mean, people in the middle of nowhere.
That's a good story.
God love you, but they are charging $700 on Airbnb. Get that money, though.
I'd be down if someone invited me to Nashville to see it. Then you can hang out in Nashville, then you can party a little bit. You know, I feel like there's a thing there.
But if you're in a small town with one gas station and like a little mini mart and everybody's making a run on the food, or campgrounds with the toilets and they're at, you know, 3 times the capacity.
And it's a 3-minute thing and it's over and you're like, well, why am I here?
It seems like we do have them all. I can remember doing the thing where you cut the
pinhole.
This is a very specific one. This is a specific line of totality.
It's 10 days.
I don't think anyone is disputing the importance or the value and the quality of this opportunity. It's just, I agree with Jeff that it's gone to the point where that's all anyone's thinking. You go on Twitter and it's just like, everyone's talking about, can you believe it's 20 days away? Ah, ah, ah. And you're like, okay, everyone calm down. It'll be here soon enough.
Maps and graphs.
It's pretty clear.
A lot
who,
of maps.
Pretty clear who in the studio lacks a sense of childlike wonder.
That's true.
I think you nailed it. All right, let's talk about, I had for overreported, and it was only a day, but the poll that came out that polled Republican voters, and it had asked if Republicans, if President Trump had found massive voter fraud, if you would be okay with the president postponing the 2020 election. New York Times had it. It was a poll in which 52% of those polled said yes. And the headlines then became most Republicans want Trump to postpone the election in 2020. And just, it was on purpose, like inciting and you know, fanning flames. It's clicky. And it was just everywhere on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I hated that story. And I remember making a mental note. I'm like, overreported. It's never going to happen. So that was a thing. So underreported. Let's go to underreported. Kim, what do you got for underreported?
So yesterday, Chicago Magazine had a story by Lee Gaines about, it was called What Happened to Illinois' Medical Cannabis Advisory Board. Mm. And, you know, for those who haven't been keeping track, the Illinois medical marijuana law is one of the is the strictest in the country, and it's on a sunset. And per this report, the advisory board was quietly disbanded in a deal with Rauner to keep the law going, because, you know, I think he was not as absolutely in favor of it as some of his Democratic opponents. And
well, this is a big project that his predecessor, Governor Quinn, put in. And then I remember Rauner in the first 6 months or whatever looked at that advisory board, and he looked at who was getting Illinois medical marijuana licenses, and he said this is all he kind of pointed out that this was what do you call it, like political.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it was Representative Liu Lang, who's sort of the architect of this bill, who made the agreement to disband the board in order to get the extension. But what it really doesn't address is the fact that this law is still incredibly restrictive and not very useful. And there's a lot of people I know personally who legitimately have issues like multiple sclerosis and pain issues that could be alleviated by this. And it's really a disservice. I mean, we still have people in Illinois who are going to Colorado, where legal and recreational marijuana is widely available. You know, marijuana refugees. Illinois is a state where we have, we are creating marijuana refugees with our restrictive
it's
law.
It's an interest. I mean, you're right. It is one of the more restrictive, if not the most restrictive, which is strange for the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago you would think to be a more progressive state. But it is, it's an interesting way that I've never seen it, and I don't pay too close attention to state all state legislators, but I've never seen it where there's been such the restrictive part is in what the qualifications
are.
The conditions are. Like they're haggling over that.
Yeah. And it's, and what's interesting too, is even in states that, you know, we think of as pretty, historically conservative, you know, like Kentucky, they have been a lot looser than Illinois has, because it doesn't really take any particular political ideology if there is a child that suffers intractable seizures to think they need, you know, they need access to us, or someone who, you know, has chronic pain, PTSD, things like that, multiple sclerosis. And it's kind of a head scratcher why Illinois is really trailing the rest of the country, because in the time since the law was passed in Illinois, the rest of the country has really just
There's a number of states that will probably have ballot measures, but it'll be interesting to see how that issue plays out with a Justice Department that is less friendly to that issue coming up in the future. Let's go to Jeff. What do you got for underreported?
I think you and I both had the Manafort situation. any other week, that would have been a huge deal, but with the North Korea situation kind of drowning everything else out, which was the news that the FBI had raided Manafort's home last month. And that since subpoenas have gone out related to his bank dealings, just it's starting to take the flavor of a more major criminal investigation that you might see. I mean, to knock on somebody's door at dawn and go through their stuff.
A pre-dawn raid, always my favorite kind of raid.
Right, that's not a good sign. And it also answers some questions. I mean, does it suggest that, you know, people wondered, could Manafort flip on the president? Is that the way this goes? Well, apparently not. You know, For something so big, it just didn't get
you
that
know,
much pressure.
I have to say that the intense scrutiny of Paul Manafort at his time as chief of staff in the Trump campaign, at the time when he was chosen to be chief of staff, and he didn't last very long, there were a lot of skeptics that said, this guy is not the kind of guy that you would think the Donald Trump would want at this stage in nature because of his connections, because he's got a lot of dirt. I remember Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy on the show, and Chris Roebling, the Republican, saying, Paul Manafort's got a lot of dirt on him.
Yeah, he came in the door right Yeah, and everybody figured it out pretty fast.
Yeah, so is it possible, and I throw this out not just to you guys to answer, but I think to in the ether, that, yeah, there was some, I don't know if the word small c collusion on the part of Paul Manafort, because that's what Paul Manafort does. And the president didn't know about it and didn't have anything to do with it, but it does sort of draw back, you know, you can, everything that we've seen up to this point, you know, circles around. Paul Manafort was in that meeting with the adoption, quote unquote, adoption lawyer. You know, Paul Manafort had a lot of business connections in Russia. So, I mean, I wonder if that might be where they're circling in when it comes to an investigation.
Well, right. And that's going to be sort of the seed of something larger. And when you hold it up against Mueller really beefing up his team with actual real criminal prosecutors, it starts to look worse and worse.
Yeah.
And there was the grand jury news from last week. And, I mean, how long do you guys think it'll be before there's any real resolution or any clarity?
Well, I think it'll take a while, but I wonder if this is a strong indication that they will be looking to go after certain people as opposed to what the media has created. And I don't mean this in any bad way, but the idea that this was all a big conspiracy to the president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think what you're going to see is more scrutiny on some of the mid-level type people, Paul Manafort being a good example, where it could end there, meaning that he was, that's what he does. He had connections. That's how he runs campaigns.
Right. And that's why it then moves to the cover-up, which is why they say the cover-up
right.
always gets you.
That's always gets you, man. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio right now. All right. So we'll come back. We'll do the rabbit hole stories and we'll pick which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. We're about to go. We're going to talk about which stories took us down the rabbit hole this week. 773 says, on the scale of James Bond movies, how big is the eclipse, Goldfinger or Skyfall? You guys ever wanted?
I was going to sing the theme, but I didn't want to do that to the listeners.
I'm a no comment. I'm ignoring the eclipse for 10 days.
312 says, Kentucky supports marijuana and has for years because it's the only crop that can replace tobacco. Well, that's Andy. I don't know. I don't know much about tobacco or Kentucky at all in those kind of situated. I don't know too much about Kentucky's, what they produce. I don't know.
Yeah. I think I cut off my mic.
I gotcha.
Okay.
You're all good.
All right.
You're all set. Don't worry about it. All right. 312-981-7200. All right, Jeff, why don't we start with you? What story took you down the rabbit hole this week? What were you reading?
It was not a traditional rabbit hole where you kind of bounce from thing to thing, but it's a very long story that I kind of gave a lot of thought to. It's the current Atlantic cover story. It's a Kurt Anderson piece entitled How America Lost Its Mind.
Mm.
And it's kind of a good summary piece, I think, for some of the stuff we've been talking about. And it's sort of the subhead is, the nation's current post-truth moment is the ultimate expression of mindsets that have made America exceptional throughout its history. And it sort of it walks through America's recent past and says that this current state that we're in, where everybody kind of gets to claim their own facts and their own political reality, comes out of first the 60s, where everybody kind of, relativism took over and everybody kind of had their own, you know, camped out on their own ends of the political spectrum. And that grew into the consumerism of the 80s, and that grew into the internet. And now you have all these groups where in the past they would have been fringe groups, finding it impossible to get their message out and kind of pushed to the sidelines of society. They've kind of glommed together on the internet, and they draw strength from each other. And then political systems have to start paying attention to them. And then somebody like Trump is a master of recognizing that and capitalizing on it. And before you know it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you could make the argument that it was even before Trump. I mean, what we saw with the sort of Tea Party movement was one that was also born of the internet and was born of people not, I guess, I don't want to say just digital leaders because there's terrestrial radio and other people that kind of led that charge. But there are people that were tastemakers that sort of said, listen to us. And then everyone started paying attention.
I did have one I'm actually thinking of. So I was looking a lot into what's going on in Venezuela this week, because that's one of those stories that has kind of been on a lot of people's back burners for a long time. You know, things are getting, you know, more and more critical there. I think it was today. I'm losing all sense of time with some of these things. I think today, or it was yesterday, yesterday or today, you know, Trump was saying that, you know,
military options.
Yeah, military options on the table. But, you know, this is one of those stories that I think you know, mark it in your saved pile, and you're going to get around to it. You're going to get to that long read that dissects everything, and it gets away from you. And you know, in the meantime, you know, real things are happening to people in that country, and the story's getting bigger and bigger, and it's getting more complex. So I was really trying to grab a hold of it before it gets too.
I was going to say, what's the elevator like summary on that? Oh. I mean, because to be honest with you, that is a story. I'm with you. That I would put in underreported. It'll show up in international papers and everything, but it's one that I'm like, next. Like, I don't have time to think about what's happening, political unrest in Venezuela. And I should. I should. But I don't know anything about it.
Well, it's interesting, too. I think the response that we see a crisis of, you know, starvation, for example, I think we look at it differently in the Americas versus if this were happening, you know, in the Middle East or in Africa. But, you know, the very high level is, you know, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries, you know, booming economy because of oil. And then that market crashed. And then there was, you know, a lot of dissatisfaction, which I'm still trying to make sure I get a whole handle on it, of what's going on with, you know, their president Maduro, and there's things going on with the Supreme Court, and if these elections were legitimate, you know, meanwhile you had yeah. last summer people, you know, lining up for hours trying to go to, you know, countries across the border to get basic supplies. And now, you know, it's even more dire. You have middle-class families.
So does it come down to essentially, a civil war or a coup that's going that way? Why would the American, why would the president say military options are on the table to get involved? That's where I think I lose track of what's happening.
Everybody's ears perked up today when he said
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know it was that kind of situation. Maybe, like I said, I'm ignorant to it. I haven't paid much attention to it, but I think I would have if I thought that this was something the U.S. had vested military interest in.
I mean, this is the story that I will admit to picking up and putting down endlessly
all
week.
Me too.
And I really need to dig into it. So, because I don't know the answers, and I really do want to, especially if the president's talking about, you know, it's on the table. And just because I think it's an important story. It's a legitimate humanitarian situation that's going on.
My rabbit hole story was one that I had in a couple different categories, but it had to do with what's happening just north of us in Wisconsin. Foxconn, the huge manufacturing plant, was big press conference with Donald Trump, was up there talking about how this is great. We're keeping it in the U.S. It's going to be in Wisconsin. It's going to be, you know, in Kenosha area. And then it started to trickle out last week that maybe it wasn't the greatest deal. They were getting incentives out the wazoo there was a stat that said for every man, woman, and child in Wisconsin, they could buy an iPhone for as much as they're giving up in taxes. But the big thing this week, which I found I had no idea there was this kind of political strife in Wisconsin, but that the state assembly there, which is Republican run, they're in cahoots with Governor Walker, does not like this the deal.
There was something I read that the factory, they might not even break ground on the factory for more than a decade.
I wouldn't be surprised. And then the number that is holding up Republican assembly, whether it be in their Senate or in their assembly, is that they're not going to see any sort of return in investment till 2043.
Maybe that's what it was.
The idea that there's so, I mean, that's how much incentives are being, given to this company to come here. And, you know, beyond all the other questions about whether or not their relationships with labor and abuses and things that are on this company's record, it's just startling to me that the argument about whether or not that is coming to Wisconsin, it really comes down to a deal in the assembly, and it's a Republican-led assembly that is saying, hold your horses. And I didn't think that that was going to be possible, especially after the Republican president and the Republican governor are shaking hands saying this is a done deal.
I kind of like the old-fashioned Illinois-Wisconsin rivalry part of it, too. I read something today which they pointed out that it's close enough to the border where most of the workers will be from Illinois,
right?
And so
right.
Wisconsin's going to pay for it, and you jerks. You know?
Well, that was the editorial in the Tribune saying, why didn't Illinois play for this? And then the response to that is, Illinois did. They let Wisconsin, yeah. And they'll be able to go over the border. All right, we reload this week's news. We got through all the categories this week with Jeff Cohen. He's an investigative reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. Kim Bellware, reporter at large. Let's get to our final category, my favorite. Which story will be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100, 500 years from this week? What do you think it's going to be? Why don't we start with you, Kim?
North Korea. We're going to remember this as the juncture at which all the young people started dusting off their parents and grandparents' fallout shelter manuals. And, you know, I'm looking at this nice handy sheet that Jeff printed out from the city of Chicago about what to do in the event of a nuclear threat. So,
Jeff, what do you got for that?
I think for 500 years, we got to go Trubisky. That's going to be right there. North Korea, that's the one. I mean, no matter which way it goes, it's the first major, foreign policy test for Trump and the first real, potential cataclysm.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
I will say, are we ready for this one? You guys ready? I will say this one probably is a more 50-year than a 500, but I will say that early in this week, they had talked about the Army Corps of Engineers and others getting together to create more resources and funding to stop the Asian carp from getting into the Lake Michigan. This was right at the beginning of the week, and they talked about, I think it was in Joliet, I can't remember where it was, that there's a bottleneck that they want to put a fence up there, and they need to get the funding to do so because that's the last line of defense, and they feel like that's the best chance. I think my prediction is that this will be the week that we look back and say we should have done that.
When that's the only fish.
It's the only fish we have, and Asian carp is all we have, and it has destroyed Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan is just a brown Asian carp, just one big fish. We'll go, man. Maybe we should have done that.
Whatever happened to the test that was put out to all the best chefs in Chicago to cook with it?
I think they went, nah, no thanks.
That's pretty gross.
You know what? We'll work with a fence. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware, reloading this week's news. You guys, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks.